So last weekend, you know, I was reading all these articles about the 60th anniversary of Brown versus Board of Education. There was a number of articles in media across the country, and the First Lady, Michelle Obama, kind of touched on it in a speech in Topeka, Kansas. Are our schools becoming more racially segregated? Are we having resegregation in our schools? And given that here in Indianapolis, we were one of many cities that had that long, long, long racial battle, legal battle, in terms of racial segregation, which was legal by state statute, by city statute, a long federal court order, the busing within IPS, the busing to the townships. So there's a long, long history. So we said, what is the situation today of the 225 public schools? That is the public schools in all 11 districts, plus 36 charter schools. So we said, let's look at what is the racial makeup of all of those schools. The only schools we excluded that are public charter schools are the virtual schools. Because if you're a virtual school, one, you could live anywhere in the state and attend a virtual school here in Marion County. And even though they do track the race, you're not in a classroom. You're sitting at home doing your work on one thing and looking at the X, playing with the Xbox on the other side. So we left out the virtual schools. We left everybody in. And here's what we found. First of all, this school year, there's basically 55,384 African-American students in our Indy public schools. 58.2% of them attend a school where blacks are in the majority. That's a school that's 50% or more African-American. 41.8% attend schools where blacks are in the minority, where the black enrollment is less than 50%. Another 41% of all black students attend a school where blacks comprise between 50% and 75% of the enrollment. Only 17% of black students that are in public schools in this city and county attend a school where blacks are 75% or more. What somebody would say is a segregated school. Then some of these sociologists say that any school that is 90% or more of one race is a school that has severe segregation. But here in Indianapolis, few African Americans attend such a school. Out of that 55,000 African Americans that are in public school, only 7% attend a school that has an enrollment that is 90% or greater African American. Just 7%. On the reverse side, 0.02%, 12 African American students attend a public school that is 90% or more white. Just 12. I'll explain that a little bit in just a minute. Integration of black students is strongest in Decatur, Franklin, Lawrence, Perry, Washington, Wayne Townships, plus Beech Grove and Speedway. The highest percentage of black students attending black majority schools are in Pike Township, where 88.7% of black students in Pike Township schools are attending a school that's 50% or more black. In IPS, 79.9% of black students in IPS attend a school that's 50% or more black. 77% of all charter school students are attending a school that's 50% or more black. And 76.5% of black students in the Warren Township schools are 76.5% of those black students attend a school that's black majority. Oh, in case some of you are saying, well, wait a minute, aren't some of our kids still being bused to the townships? Let me tell you, it's the end of this school year virtually. Next year is the last year of busing from IPS to the southern townships, and it's just the senior class that's being bused to Decatur, Perry, and Franklin. Most of the black students, virtually all the black students that are in Decatur, Franklin, and Perry Township live down there. They ain't on the school, they ain't on that school bus, they on the regular school buses. A couple of other things. In Pike Township, where blacks make up 59% of the district's total enrollment, 10 of the district's 13 schools have black majorities between 50 and 75%. In Warren Township, where blacks comprise 48.3% of the district's total enrollment, 9 of the district's 17 schools have black majorities between 50 and 75%. One of the things that raised my eyebrow, and you'll hear from our guest in just a hot second, in IPS, 31.4% of black students attend a school that's 75% or more black. But of black students in Indy's charter schools, 47.9%, almost half, attend a school that's 75% or more African American. Of the county's 225 public schools, just 13 were found to be severely segregated with enrollments that are 90% or more black. 3 of those are IPS schools. The remainder are charters and takeovers, and all but one of those are supervised by the mayor's charter school office. 7.2% of IPS's black students attend a school that's 90% or more black, but over a quarter of black charter school students attend a severely segregated charter school. Only one public school in the city has an enrollment that's 90% or more white, and there are no public schools in this city that have a 90% or more Hispanic. And in case you're asking, Amos, what are those schools? It is 90% one way or another. The 90% white school is in Decatur Township called Decatur Discovery Academy. The schools that are 90% or more African American in IPS is Lewis B. Russell, School 48, Joyce Kilmer, School 69, and Robert Frost, School 106. The takeover school, y'all know that's Arlington. And the charter schools are Flanner House, Kip, all the Charles Tinleys, because they got so many, Andrew Academy, Phelan Leadership Academy. We'll take a break. When we come back, Rob Bohannon has fought several of the battles of school segregation and integration over the years, former head of the Indianapolis chapter of the NAACP. Earl Phelan thought he's on the phone, but he in the house. He just started a school this year, and that's 90% African-American, but it's not by Earl Phelan's choice because Earl's been educating all kind of kids. And Marcus Tinley of Ed Power, that's got all these Tinley, he's got more Tinley schools than they got little schoolhouses on Monopoly boards. He's on the line because I wanted them here because there's also a discussion in our community about, is diversity in the classroom important, or is it the quality of the results, regardless of the kids? So we're going to talk about integration, segregation, quality of education in Indianapolis 2014 as opposed to 1954. It's After News with Amos, after these.
On our live line is Marcus Robinson, the head of Ed Power. They operate Arlington High School and one of the takeover schools, and they operate all of the Tinley Academy, Tinley Prep, Tinley Collegiate, Tinley Renaissance, Tinley over the mountain. And Earl Phelan is with one of the city's newest charter schools, Phelan Leadership Academy, and Rod Bowen. Hannon, former president of the NAACP, distinguished barrister and lawyer who has fought many a battle on this whole issue of school integration, segregation. Rod Bohannon, as you heard the data, what stood out with you?
Well, the issue to me is not whether schools are severely segregated 90%. Mm-hmm. It is those schools are 51%. What happens and do they move toward that tipping point?
Okay.
If you look at most of the data tells you the tipping point. When I say the tipping point, meaning that the community, the society give up on them. Mm-hmm. That is, they don't get the resources from the city. They don't get the resources from the Department of Education. They don't get it from the state. They don't get the foundations. They're roughly 55 to 56%. Mm-hmm. And once you reach that tipping point, it creates a whole mirror of problems. So the real question here is how that you don't, we make sure that those schools don't get there. To reverse, that was the issue with Just Dillon. Mm-hmm. Just Dillon arguing why he wanted one-way busing, not two-way busing, was he was afraid. If he did two-way busing, then what would happen was he would have white flight accelerated, and those schools that were, may have been integrated at the time would move to that level where you could not turn around. Mm-hmm. And if you read his decision saying he would hope that the school districts would never get to the point where they reached that tipping point. That's my concern. The 90%, yeah, that's a problem. We don't have that many, and that has a lot to do in terms of geographic location. Mm-hmm. It is those schools in which you have now 51, 52% we ought to be concerned about and ask the question, what are the districts doing to make sure that doesn't happen?
I deliberately didn't make this a three-dimensional examination by looking at Hispanics. So if I'm looking at a school that's 50% black and it's 20% Hispanic, then that means there's less than 8 to 10 to 12% white. Is that another thing to look at, or does Hispanic make it different now?
It does, because if you look what's happened in New York City and in Atlanta, and if you read the stuff out of Birmingham and in Dallas, those are the things that right now the school districts that the Department of Justice and other folks are, and who are into the scientific literature are looking at about the resegregation schools. And one of the things they say is that the 56% doesn't matter whether it's all black, whether it's a combination of black and Hispanic. It is that when you reach that number, it is what happened turned to the rest of the community wrapping its arms around it and began trying to provide services to it. And so if you have, you know, a school that has such a large number of Hispanic and black, and the question becomes, do they become basically put to the side and say, we're not going to provide the services they need in terms of educational services?
Let me bring Marcus Robinson into the conversation. Marcus, one of the things with charter schools, unlike neighborhood schools or unlike what happened with busing, quote unquote, for racial balance, is your students don't necessarily, I think the perception is that the students of a charter school come from the neighborhood. That's not true. Your students literally come from all over. Is that fair to say?
That's very fair to say, Amy. The law places no geographic boundaries on charter schools in Indiana.
So when we look at just the happenstance of your schools are 90% or more of one race, those are people that choose to do that, not necessarily people that live in the Meadows, Forest Manor, Devon neighborhood where Tinley schools are located.
Right. About, I'd say a good 80 to 90% of our kids live just north of 38th Street from the Hendricks County line to the Hancock County line. Probably a few kids live outside of that, Marion County, and even fewer kids live in about four adjacent counties.
So to be fair, because actually the concentration within the charters kind of surprised me, and I knew that was going to be a controversial part of sharing this with the community. But then when I looked at it, I'm saying, do we need, when we look at charters and we examine this, do we need to look at where the students come from and not make that assumption, oh, they're just from the neighborhood?
Absolutely. I mean, in the mayor's office actually has that data, Amos. They do scatter plots that show where the kids are placed, where they live residentially in the county by school.
Earl Phelan, you're kind of new at this, but you have been working with children of all races here and in other cities with your summer academies. When you saw how your school was developing this year and it was virtually all African-American, was there a concern of where can I find some diversity?
No. I mean, Okay. Our first and foremost focus was to your question before. We're here to deliver an exceptionally high-quality education to all children. Mm-hmm. And when I think back and look back at kind of the efforts of desegregation, I think part of it was a global strategy to try to get our children into higher quality or some of the highest quality, highest resource schools. So we feel like as long as we're providing an extraordinary education for our children, we're providing experiences that help them understand the world, that we're doing a big part of what we want to do for our young scholars.
What about the argument, Earl Phelan and Marcus Robinson, that if we're preparing young people for a multicultural career world and a multicultural collegiate world, that, you know, being in a segregated environment, even though it's not de jure segregation, can inhibit those students' ability if they elect to go to the Harvards and the Yales, and instead of being the big fish in a small African American pond, they then are a very small fish in a majority white pond.
Well, I'll tell you, Amos, we believe in W.E.B. Du Bois' concept of double consciousness. And so we're educating our kids in ways that we think are congruent for African American students, but also that directly take on the canon. We also try to blast them out into other experiences. I'm talking to you from a closet inside of Six Flags St. Louis because we brought kids over to visit Washington University and St. Louis University. We currently have students at Wellesley and Amherst and Northwestern universities, Notre Dame, but we also have kids at Tuskegee. And so we feel like as long as we're addressing what the larger culture is about, and making sure our kids have those meaningful external experiences, they wind up ready.
Rod Bohannon, you've heard these two great educators, their side, you know, you're buying what they're selling, particularly, you know, the W.E.B. Du Bois example. You know, there are people that feel that we should have followed that example after Brown versus Board of Education.
Well, two issues. One is, with Trill, they tell what, you know, I know Marcus just graduated, he's his third class. And so it's true.
No,
tell.
No, graduated sixth.
This is, it's your sixth class that just walked.
Yep.
Okay. So therefore, now we should be able to take a look at your first four classes. We should have now graduated college and take a look internally, trying to figure out where they are, and what they're doing. That would tell us whether or not that theory holds water and their ability to deal with corporate America, et cetera. The question I have is this. My argument in terms of, if we don't, why I think integration is critical important. The basis of learning with the majority community, and now as we move more and more to a global community, starts at the elementary level. That ability to understand those cultures, understand what you do or don't do, understand the friendship connection, understand the political connection starts then. And so in this community, and you see it often in the workplace, people talk about going into, you know, the workplace and don't know the connection. And so we, you know, that was the issue for folks who came out, the DSECs, who were put in the segregated school corporation, IPS, who went to corporate America, didn't have the political connection to figure out how to maneuver to do the economic development we need to do in our community and the political connection. It is that. For those of us who deal in that arena, you see that. You see that political connection go back all the way back to elementary school. And we're out of it. And so that was part of the argument I make in terms of why we need the integrative. I hear the argument that it doesn't matter whether it's an all-black school or an all-white school as long as you're doing quality education. But it's beyond that point that gets people career-wide, political connection, to economic connection.
Earl Phelan, you are starting with K, first and second. Just announced you're working with Day Nursery, yes, on the pre-K. What about what Rod says?
You know, I think that his arguments at one level are correct, and I think the argument at the other level may miss something. If you're a student in Indianapolis, you have a 37% chance of dropping out of school. I mean, of graduating from high school if you're a black male in Indianapolis. So if we don't think that the core foundation should be, we're talking about connections in the workplace. Our young people who are dropping out of high school aren't getting to the workplace. They're not getting to college. And so I think Marcus and Tinley should be held to a standard. I think Phelan Leadership Academy should be held to that high standard. But we have to start with the foundational piece, which is, can our children read, write, compute proficiently? Secondly, are they the type of young people in terms of their character that we want in our community, leading our schools and leading us in the future? And I'm very comfortable with the fact that many of our greatest leaders in the black community came out of Spelman and Morehouse, which were all a black college experience. And so the notion, we're a public school, we're open to any child to come, and we hope more and more children will take advantage of the experience. But making the priority integration over education and high academic standards and excellence, that's not going to be our focus.
We're talking about new data that has been released on the level of integration and segregation in Indianapolis's 225 public schools. Rod Bohannon, Earl Phelan, Marcus Robbins is here. Let me go to William at 239-1310. Hi there.
How you doing, Mr. Brown?
I'm fine. What's up?
Listen, I have a question. I was just wondering, since all of the schools, the quality schools in the black neighborhoods have been closed and sold, and they have thought they bussed all of the kids to the district outlining schools, what happened to the kids? How did they get to school? If they can't afford the Escalade Express.
Well,
how did they get this?
Well, here's the problem. I mentioned this earlier, William. The cross-district busing, the busing from IPS to the townships, next year is it. They're down to one group of kids who are seniors. The only kids that were bused this year were juniors and seniors out to those three townships. And so it is a extremely small group of people. Most of the kids now in those neighborhoods go to IPS or charter schools.
I would just see what I was thinking is that I was listening that the half percentage,
yes,
of black kids going to those schools, And most of them live in the disciplined areas of the city.
No, but again, the percentages I was talking about is across the whole city.
Oh, okay.
That is, when I say 225 schools, that is Pike and Warren and Beech Grove and Speedway, all these districts. It's not it's not just an IPS thing.
Okay.
All right, that's not a problem. Let me go to Glenna right quick at 239-1310. Hi, Glenna. Glenna going, is it Glenna going once? Glenna going twice?
Hi.
Glenna, come on with it.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, you're on the air. What's up?
I just said I have a praise report for Tinley. I have a great niece who will be graduating from 8th grade who is already online because she wants to go to Harvard or Yale, and she's already online getting information concerning tuition fees and all of those things. But we're expecting her to get a scholarship. Yeah, she's serious about her studies.
Where's she going to school?
She goes to Tinley.
Oh, okay.
She's graduating from the 8th grade, and she will be going into high school at Tinley, and she's already online because she wants to go to Yale or Harvard when she graduates from high school. So she's already getting information.
Glenna,
on Yale and Harvard.
Glenna, tell her look at Northwestern, too.
Okay, I'll say I'll tell you. Northwestern. And I just want to add this.
Yes,
I graduated from Lafayette Jeff in 1947, and I was the only black in my graduating class. And people that came here from Addicts High School were were distinguished students.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, see, so Addicts had a great, this was another time when they only had black staff. Black staff members. They produce some excellent students.
All right, Glenna, great points. One thing I did not mention, Marcus Robinson and Earl Phelan and Rod Bohannon, in the 225 public schools in this city and county, every one of those schools have African-American students enrolled. And when I say every one, we're not talking about A. We're talking about minimum 12 and up. And every one of those schools except one has Hispanic students. And Marcus, you got one of your Tinleys. You need a couple of Hispanic brothers and sisters in that one.
I agree with that, Amos. We're actually taking our materials right now, translating them into Spanish for that purpose.
Is that an area of as you look at diversity, is that an, I don't want to say growth is the wrong word, is that an area where diversity is critical?
I think that's especially important, man. We got in the business and we were dirt poor, right? And so from our standpoint, getting the building open was a challenge. We didn't get to do any serious marketing and targeting of students per se. And so we landed in the Meadows, and essentially we worked with the families who were willing to bring their kids to the Meadows on a daily basis. And so I assumed 12 years ago, Amos, that we'd have more schools serving more diverse populations across the city. But when it comes to our Hispanic Latino brothers and sisters, man, we just haven't had that investment either from the traditional school community or the reform community. So, you know, somebody's got to step up.
239-1310, 239-1310, this afternoon's name is. We invited the Deputy Mayor for Education, Jason Cloth, or the head of the Mayor's Charter School Program, Brandon Brown, on the program. They have prior commitments. Yeah. They couldn't appear on the program today. Now, Earl could get here. Marcus is locked in a closet in St. Louis. He's here, but they were busy. However, let me tell you what they sent me. They said, as you know, charter schools are open enrollment public schools where parents are able to choose whether or not to enroll their children. We certainly value racial and socioeconomic diversity in public schools. However, the demographics of both traditional public schools and charter schools tend to reflect the neighborhoods in which they are located. Of the 8 mayor-sponsored charter schools with African-American student enrollment above 90%, 7 are located in or near the Avondale Meadows neighborhood on the near northeast side. Likewise, the nearby IPS schools such as School 42 42, School 48, and School 69 also have African-American student enrollments above 90%. Mayor-sponsored charter schools with African-American student enrollments above 90% are producing exceptional results. Please see below for the 2013 letter grade issued by the Indiana Department of Education for each school. Challenge Foundation, A. Tinley 1, A. Tinley Prep, A. Flanner House, A. Kip, C. Andrew Academy, C. Tinley Collegiate, first year of operation. Tinley Renaissance, first year of operation. Regarding Arlington High School, the other school overseen by our office with an African-American enrollment above 90%, we only assumed oversight of the school last summer. The African-American enrollment in Arlington has been above 90% for five of the past six school years, which significantly predates any state turnaround process or mayor's office involvement. The only thing I'm going to add to that statement, they miscategorize School 42, which is only 86% African-American, not 90%. So, Deputy Mayor Brandon, if you're going to send me something, make sure your research is correct, because if I was grading this, you get 10 points off for that. And now that I know that charter school students don't necessarily live in their neighborhood, trust me, they are going to be asked for a breakdown how many live in the immediate neighborhood and vice versa, so we can be accurate in our data. Let me go to Raymond at 239-1310. Hi, Raymond.
Hey, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm a product of IPS, and I came out in the 70s, 80s, and I'm just wondering, I have always wondered, because I hear it over and over again about charter schools versus public schools, and I know the curriculum, the buildup of the students, but a few things I don't want to know the difference is the parental involvement or requirement, like your teachers and their requirements. How full are you? Do you do K through 8 or 6? Or if you could just give me, like, a capsule of what actually the difference between a charter and public school is, because I know it's been said over and over again, but I'm still confused.
I think the folks that do that are confused. Let me start with the one that's been doing this the longest, and Marcus Robinson. What is the difference?
Sure. First and foremost, the governance structure. Traditional public schools are managed by elected school boards, and charter schools are managed by private board of directors. And so oversight of the school is different. We talked a little bit about geographic boundaries. Traditional public schools have districts, places where you live in the district and therefore get assigned to a school. Charter schools don't have those boundaries. Kids can live anywhere in the state of Indiana and come to those schools tuition-free. And so under the circumstances, then, you don't get to pick and choose your enrollment. Back to Earl's earlier comment about, you know, we have to serve the kids who show up, right? And so one of the things I think we're not talking about is kind of what Rod intimated earlier, right? Judge Dillon felt like desegregation needed to be present because housing patterns weren't going to change. Mm-hmm. And so when the mayor's office says, hey, the schools represent the people who live in the neighborhood, well, that's true. If you put a bunch of schools in a black neighborhood, it causes the people to think, well, who's going to be comfortable sending those children to those schools, right? So if Phelan Academy is very successful, will it draw more affluent parents? Will it draw white parents? Will it draw Hispanic parents, right? And so when it becomes a question of choice, will folks integrate the other way if the school is successful?
Yeah, and sir, I hear the argument that charter schools are serving as public schools. My disagreement comes when I look at the question of due process. Because it's government money, you're entitled to due process. And when I look at most of the charter schools' due process, they say, well, we follow the state law for, you know, exposed suspension. But then the question becomes thereafter, do you have a right to review to go to the board of directors? And most board of directors take the position, we don't touch it. And so when in a public school, if you were in IPS or Decatur or Warren, you have a right to appeal to the superintendent, you know, after you have your hearing, the superintendent and the board. That to me is the due process argument. When you have a disagreement with the headmaster of the school, can you go to the board and have that discussion with them? And in most of the charter schools,
state law, Rod, because the due process law is indifferent. That doesn't mean people aren't breaking that law, which is a whole different matter, right? And so schools ought to follow, any public school ought to follow a child's rights. And so when a kid comes into a due process scenario, they're entitled to review at the district level or whoever is the head of the corporation, as well as the board, if that board chooses to hear appeals. Under Indiana law, school boards can decide whether or not they want to entertain appeals of expulsion hearing proceedings. And so I agree with you that some people aren't following the rules, and we got to hold those people accountable.
I got a text message at 37890, keyword Amos. This is probably more for Earl and Marcus. The workplace is integrated and the neighborhoods are integrated. How do you include mediation and integration in a charter school where the population is made up of mostly one race? What is set in place in the schools to address these world conflicts, Earl?
Well,
that's a great text message.
I might dispute the fact that neighborhoods are highly integrated. I read a study that said economically, at least, Indianapolis is one of the most segregated major cities in the United States of America. So I don't know that I necessarily agree that the neighborhoods are well integrated.
Depends on the neighborhood. Because, again, in this city, 42% of African Americans live in a white majority neighborhood. In this city, when you look at the broad, expanse of the city, but we can argue that at Starbucks later.
Let's accept that. I still think, again, I think that Rob's argument is a second tier argument, and I think folks may be missing the first tier, which is if our children cannot read, write, and compute proficiently, their ability to interact in the quote unquote real world is not. It's a challenge for our young people to get to that place. It's a challenge for them to get to employment. It's a challenge for them not to stay away from being incarcerated. It's a challenge for them to find a job that will allow them to take care of their family. So our first focus is how do you make sure many more children read, write, and compute proficiently? The second thing I'd say is there's this kind of belief that if we're in an integrated environment, that the environment is integrated, and that's just false. Mm-hmm. Right after desegregation was pushed through, and I live in Boston, one of the hottest places integration. As soon as that happened, what did you see? You saw tracking. You saw tracking within schools. And so now all of a sudden there was a real smart track, there was a middle track, and there was a lower track. And most of our children were pushed into the lower tracks. And when that didn't work, all of a sudden now we saw behavioral issues and behavioral expulsions. So there's been a pattern of, yes, you may be able to get us in the same building. You probably won't. You may be able to get us in the same building. But even if you do get us in the same building, we're going to find ways to make sure that some children receive a higher quality education within that building and others do not. And then the final thing I'd say is, you know, IPS, at least from my historical understanding, which may be very limited to the others in this room, it was predominantly black. All of a sudden now apartments go up and make affordability in the townships a little bit easier for some of our families. Many of our families make their way there. I see the townships struggling mightily with educating children who have moved from IPS into the townships. And again, I don't see those as highly effective schools, and I don't see those – they may be more integrated, but I don't see them as highly effective. And I think we have to start with effective first. And the final thing I'll say on this point is the teachers and the teaching staff and the administration, these aren't all black schools. Mm-hmm. And so the notion that, wait a second, if you're in a 90% black school, you're surrounded by nothing but black adults.
Which is different than the addicts history,
right,
in this city, and different than others because the staffs were as segregated as the students. And we have this acute shortage of African-American males and females, both to be teachers as well as administrators, which maybe what Marcus is also doing in St. Louis is trying to surreptitiously recruit while you're down there in Missouri.
Well, absolutely.
Do you want anything to add to that? I think Rod wants to jump in here, Marcus.
Yeah, I mean, I think quality is definitely an issue, right? We have to save our babies at all costs, and I can't be especially concerned about who's showing up. And so Tinley works for African-American students. We didn't construct it necessarily that way. It does. If we had white kids walking in, if for whatever reason we had an infusion of Hispanic students, 50%, we'd have to flip the school to make it work for the kids who actually show up. And so I am in a different business from the standpoint that I can't target a community, I can't target a neighborhood and say, here's who I serve and I'm going to build a school to be that. We have to design systems that work for any kid walking through the door, which is incredibly tough business.
My point being,
Rob, go ahead.
The issue in terms of quality of school, in terms of getting base performance, as you say, reading, writing, and the political connection are not one and two. They are the same. They're connected. Marcus and you have a different role in terms of trying to figure out how do I get kids performance, get my school operating performance, get the A grade. It is the political folks like me who have to have discussions, as I've been having discussions with the mayor's office for some time. And so I'm sorry that I hear about how do you now make sure that these schools are integrated, because my concern is we've been dealing with this issue in terms of kindergarten for about a good 10 years. And the political connection keeps thinking, because they keep thinking that it's us, and because they think the money's going to go to us, that the political connection don't say, let's make the money available for kindergarten across the board. And as long as they think that we're separate, we have that issue in terms of the economic and political issues not making sufficient resources. That is my argument. I hear your argument. But I also know how this community plays out. And so as long as we're not, they don't see us in it or think we are 90% or 80%, whatever, they exclude us. And we'll find a way to exclude us. If they know their kids are involved in this, they find a way of turning and saying, my kids need the resources, the school needs the resources, I will make sure it gets there.
239-1310, 239-1310 is after his name. Just let me quickly go, David. Let me take a break. We'll be back with our remaining moments with Marcus Robinson, Earl Phelan, and Rod Bohannon. Tomorrow, living history in the house, members of the Montford Point Marines, those brothers that broke the color barrier of the Marine Corps in 1942 when it wasn't written that we was winning the war. And we'll hear from those brothers. They were a few. They was proud, and they got to be Marines the hard way. A great way to enter into the Memorial Day weekend. It's after news with names after these. Welcome back. 239-1310. 239-1310. We've got great educators, Marcus Robinson, Earl Phelan, Rob Bohannon. Not an educator, but he got a law degree. So that's like you're educated. Should we also, let's start with Marcus, should we also celebrate in such a way that we don't have any school in this city that is empty of a black student? Then we got 225 public schools, and all of them got black kids in there. Should that also tell the community that when we look at how well black kids are educated, we need to look at all 225 and ask, are they performing as well as Tinley's kids or Challenge's kids or Flannerhouse's kids or how Earl Phelan wants his kids to be? Should that be the standard?
Yeah, I mean, I think to Rod's earlier point about the whole community caring, right? We can't just focus on one or two schools. It's everybody's school. I was a DSEG baby in St. Louis, the second largest DSEG program next to Boston in the country. And we thought back in the 70s that that was the answer. We just get our kids in the right schools, then they can get better opportunities. And to Earl's point, we found out that if they get into schools where they are tracked into low tracks disproportionately, then they don't wind up doing any better than if they had been in their home district. And so our kids are all over Marion County. Every school counts. Every school deserves the kind of critique and scrutiny to make sure that they're succeeding for black kids.
And I would even add to that, we haven't talked about the private schools and the Catholic schools. And now that we have the vouchers, which is public funds, and a lot of the private schools and Catholic schools are now taking public funds, and are expanding or at least surviving based on it, we need to look at the question in terms of what has happened to our black kids in those schools. That's a different discussion.
Ooh, that is a different discussion. I think it's in some of the data that I've seen, they're comparable to the results of Tinley. They're comparable to the results of a Challenge. They're comparable, if I'm comparing them to Charter, they're comparable to the results in Pike and Washington Township. But Marcus Robinson, does Rod have a point? I mean, are we at a point when I annually look at how our kids are doing in I-STEP, for example, I need to look at the private ones because they're taking our money?
I think that's absolutely the case. You know, if we're going to stand behind a reform, we ought to know whether or not the reform works for us. That makes sense.
I got to find out whether they actually track that data, because that's going to be another kettle of fish.
But the data right now does tell me, and if you look at the Department of Education website, will tell me about every school in every city, in every county in the state, whether private, public, or Catholic, or reform school, however you want to define it. If they're receiving voucher, it tells me how many vouchers they have of students, and it tells me the dollar amount. So the data's already there to track. The question has to do is trying to figure out what's going on and who's there. and what's happening to African-American students if they're getting vouchers and going there.
239-1310. 239-1310. This afternoon's name is we're talking education and integration. Given Marcus, you grew up in St. Louis, and their DSEG thing was off the hook. Earl, you was in Boston where they made movies about that. Here, the tension was more in classrooms in the school, not out on the street. So we didn't have the horrificness of the outside demonstrations that Boston have. I can't remember whether St. Louis had public demonstrations.
Oh, yes.
See, we didn't have that. It was all within the school. The tensions were more in school. And I don't know whether that's it just moved the problem inside where you couldn't see it as opposed to the community having to confront it in a way. And I think Indianapolis is still paying the price for how we handled all that back in the day. The other thing is as we teach our kids history, should they be taught that history?
I think so. I grew up in Newark.
Oh, that's another thing.
And I went to, my school district was segregated. Mm-hmm. And so I went to a high school that was all black. And technically, I was told that, you know, I didn't have the skills to be a lawyer. I should be I should go be a publisher and a printer. So I know what it's like being told, being track. I understand that. I know that my high school used to do track, and you had A, B, C, D, E, and you got track, and whether you were A, you know, they thought you caused material, and whether they thought you were D, that you really shouldn't be there. So the school district was doing that long before that. And so I think we, by not teaching our kids to understand the struggle, we argue about kids don't, why they don't understand the value of education. You know, my grandfather made a point of understanding about, you know, his struggle to go to school, why I need to learn that. We forget to teach our kids that, so they don't understand the value of it. So we say they don't come in with the value of it. They don't understand the history of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm. 239-1310, 239-1310. Marcus Robinson, thank you. So you're taking them around Washington University?
Yeah, I mean, you know, until we get big time with the big national brands, we have to go regionally. So we take them to Missouri, Illinois, Ohio, the places we can reach in a day by bus.
All right. So, and I got a note that you just finished walking the students across the stage, getting their diplomas.
Yeah, we walked some kids out. They're going on to IU. They're going on to Ball State. They're also headed to North Carolina A&T, Smith College, University of Dayton. We're very proud of the Tinley kids.
Smith,
Arlington kids coming up next week.
Uh-oh. Is the graduation rate up?
It's climbing.
It's climbing. Absolutely. And y'all, and the state, and you got, you all have settled that thing where the state didn't have the right numbers for your graduation rate?
I hope so. it seems to be a work in process.
Let me go to Lisa right quick at 239-1310. Hi there.
Yeah, I'm listening to the conversation. It just made me think, I'm dealing with my daughter right now, being a teenager, being in school. And I never before heard my daughter say she didn't like being in school or enjoy school. So I believe that once our children come into awareness of life a little bit more, they start seeing the racism or hearing it coming at them. And I know that as a child and when I went through school, I know I felt it. And we reject it. Young people reject it, and we don't know how to deal with it sometimes. And a lot of times they'll just walk away and won't even graduate, won't get their GED. I think the system, I don't know what the system needs to do, but I think a suggestion for it would be that everybody that's in the community should be teachers. Like, there should be jobs. People on the job should be going into those schools so those children can learn what it really is to be like on that job like they used to do. Used to have the day where people would come in and talk about what they did in the community or what their job was. Now it's just a place to babysit, seems like, and the schools are making money off of numbers.
Where's she go to school at?
She's at Gamble Prep. It's a new charter school, a new high school, but it has three different schools up in the old building on 108.
Over on West 38th Street.
Yeah, on West 38th.
That's supposed to be a great school, International Baccalaureate.
But I think it's just the fact that, you know, she's young. She's at a freshman. But she's doing work at a higher level than the freshman.
Right.
So it may be that. But I mean, I just know that once we do come in, once our children come into awareness, it, you know, they feel it and hear it, but they don't really know how to deal with it.
And somebody was asking me about Gambell the other day as I was putting this together, and that's a school that's kind of three-way, about a third African-American, about a third Latino, and about a third white. So that's
yeah, it's that kind fits. Of a mixture, and it's three different schools in one. It's not just a high school. It's three different schools in that building. So
maybe that's part of the problem is three schools in one building, and they haven't figured out how to divide the building up.
Exactly. Maybe that's it. I don't know, but I thought I'd make a comment. I was down there for the prayer today, and I felt like I was kind of concerned because I felt like a lot of people. We have a lot of churches in this city. I think it should have been more Christians that showed up because they prayed in Jesus' name. They didn't just pray in general. You see?
All right. I appreciate that, Marcus Robinson. You got five schools now, but you kind of spread them out, and I think the caller was talking about three schools in one. Is sometimes educational experiments can be too complicated. The simple stuff works. Keep one school in one school, put the other school in another building.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as a community, we're wrestling with what do we do with a surplus of school space,
mm-hmm.
and how we make multiple programs work. We launched Tinley Renaissance at Arlington while Arlington was in play. You had a building that's 380,000 square feet. And so we were able to find a way basically to lock off the two populations from each other so that they didn't need to cross paths. Otherwise, you wind up with an older culture trying to blend with a younger culture, and that just never works very well.
And it sounds like maybe that what the caller's daughter, granddaughter is experiencing. One, you're in a high performance school because international baccalaureate, that's not play.
Sure.
Right. Okay. That's like you're not driving it to go kart. You're driving on the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
That's serious because as a community, you know, Rod's point and Earl's point about tracking, right?
Mm-hmm.
Really gets to this question of rigor. Are our kids across the community not just confronted with rigor, but do they even have access to it, right? It's mm-hmm. our IB program. It takes something to get into an IB program, right? And so one of the things that we've got to confront as a community is if we want our kids to go to college and finish, then we have to make sure that they get meaningful rigor before they get there. And that's going to hurt. And so sometimes our concept, especially those of us like me who didn't get all the rigor that we deserved in high school, sometimes our concept of how hard kids should work has to shift and change based on our new reality.
And I think, and Earl, we were here earlier, you got that long day in your school.
We do. 8-hour day versus
six and a half. It's like being a lawyer.
8-hour versus six and a half. We're 225 days versus a traditional 180. So trying to get that extra time so you have time for the academics, your time for the social and emotional development. Our scholars are putting on a musical tonight.
They're kindergarten, first, and second. They doing the musical?
Doing a musical tonight. They are.
Different styles, or is it?
It's a whole range of different styles. Like kindergarten is different than the first and second, but they were starting that. They have held me out of it. They want me to see it for the first time tonight, so I'm going to get to see it tonight, which will be wonderful.
You're going to be the critic.
That's right.
Don't come into the rehearsal room. Let me go to Ramona right quick at 239-1310. Hi there.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
I sit on probably about four sides of this conversation. I was one of the first people bust out to Southport High School. My children have only attended private schools. We live in Pike Township. We are now moving them from a private school from Whitestown over into Washington Township schools because we felt like that the rigor was there for them. And we just felt like that what we were paying for long before vouchers came into existence, we felt like what we were paying for, we just weren't getting enough of it. So we're going to try Washington Township schools because they are IB schools to see if we can get that rigor for our boys.
Mm-hmm.
But it is difficult. The quest for a good education within the city itself is very difficult, and it requires a lot of research. And unfortunately, we're not open or privy to a lot of what's going on, so we know what choices to make for our children.
What, when you say the research, what should be made available to parents and grandparents?
Well, other than just, if you tell me that a school has an F rating, I need to know what in that school makes it an F rather than just you didn't pass a I-STEP test or your scores were low. We need to dig up under the information that we're getting. I think we're just getting surface information, and we're not really getting the whole picture.
And I'm trying to remember Marcus Robinson. I don't think the state puts out the full scorecard of how you get to an A or how you get to a C or how you get to an F, if I remember right.
Well, Amos, you know, I've shared with you in the past the struggle around transparency, really for the last 5 years, because you used to be able to get at disaggregated data really easily before they changed and moved to that growth model. And so now it's very complicated to really understand why a school gets the grades they get.
Ramona, you made a very, very good point, because I'm here in the media and I can't find out, or sometimes a school will give me the scorecard that they get from the state that's not made public. And I've complained on this show that schools have had growth, not the growth that the old model, the Tony Bennett model, wanted, and the schools got penalty points. I understand giving you a penalty point if your kids go down, but if your kids go up but they don't grow as much, you shouldn't get a penalty point. You ought to get 1 point and then 2 points if you really do well. Ramona, that is a great point. We appreciate that. Guys, thanks very, very much. Marcus, I'm going to let you go back to the tour of Washington University in St. Louis. It'll probably figure out how to steal a Super Bowl from us in a few years. Thank you all very much. Say hello to those scholars that are there with you. Earl Phelan's getting ready to go to his musical.
That's right.
What are they going to do, blindfold you when you go in there?
No, they're not going to blindfold me, but I haven't been able to see the rehearsals.
You haven't been able to see it. But then I told you, I get the feeling it's going to be off the hook. And Rod Bohannon, thanks very much for being with us. And a reminder, next week, we're going to be focusing on Your Life Matters.